Support for Connecticut East this week comes from SCAD. The Southeastern Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence is offering a $3,500 sign-on bonus for licensed clinicians. Go to licensedclinicians.org to learn more. That's licensedclinicians.org. Southeastern Connecticut Enterprise Region is the region's federally designated economic development organization, providing services and resources to the region's businesses and municipalities. Find out more at sector.org. And ServiceMaster by Mason, experts at eliminating harmful mold and mildew from your home or business. Don't let mold damage your property and cause health concerns. Call 860-455-1249. It's the biggest cadet cheating scandal in the Coast Guard Academy's history. We sit down with the Academy to find out how 55 cadets of the class of 2025 did it. Plus, we take a look at other stories making the headlines from around the region. This is Connecticut East This Week. Hello, I'm Brian Scott Smith. The U.S. Coast Guard is known around the globe for its life-saving search and rescue work, drug interdiction, and assisting with research in the Arctic. But just lately, the image of the U.S. Coast Guard has been tarnished. A report called Operation Fouled Anchor about historic sexual assault and misconduct in the service that was authored by the Coast Guard was subsequently withheld from Congress and the public and brought to light by the media organization CNN. It's now sparked federal investigations into the service and its leadership. And just recently, 55 cadets at the Coast Guard Academy based in New London, Connecticut, were found cheating on homework assignments. It's the largest cheating scandal at the Academy in its history. And I sat down with Commander Aaron Cassavant, Assistant Commandant of Cadets at the Coast Guard Academy, for an interview to talk about the recent cadet cheating situation and began by asking him how they found out about it.
We found out about the cheating incidents when the instructors in the class did a query of the computer program that we use to administer the homework assignments. And they determined that the homework assignments, and there were two of them at issue, what we found was that the homework assignments were being completed in the order of seconds and minutes rather than the amount of time that the instructors expected a homework of that complication and difficulty to take. And so what prompted the instructors to sort of start asking questions was the speed with which a student, a particular student, would open up the applet and then select the correct answers to the homework questions. And the speed with which they were doing that prompted the instructors to wonder if the cadets had received the answers in advance and were simply looking at the received answers and then selecting the answers from the problems rather than sequentially solving the problems. They did the problem sets themselves. I think that took them on the order of like 17 to 20 minutes to do each of the individual assignments. And so completing the assignment in 3 minutes versus 17 to 20 minutes is what the initial prompt was that caused us to inquire into the situation in the form of an administrative investigation.
Talk to us about how this cheating was affected. Information that we've been supplied previously was that they did this through a variety of electronic means, from text messaging to social media, and it was based off of previous cadets' answers to the assignment. So can you just explain a little bit more around that?
When the investigation was completed, what we found that there were, again, two homework assignments that were at issue, and there were several, we'll call them sort of networks of cadets that had, in effect, a source of the answers, which were then distributed to other cadets who may or may not have further distributed those answers. The sources of those answers varied. In most of the networks of cheating, the source had solved the problems themselves and were handing off the answers to those individuals that were lower in the distribution network. In one instance, a cadet who had previously taken the course the previous year supplied the answers. And in another instance, a cadet who had taken the homework assignments and done poorly on them and gone and talked to the instructor and gotten the right answer distributed those answers. So there were networks of cheating. There were sources of the answers in each one of those networks, and those answers were then further distributed to other students.
Just for clarification, you said somebody had taken the course previously. Would that be somebody in a different class of 2025?
There were 55 cadets that were found to have violated the collaboration policy. This particular cadet is a member of the class of 2024. He is a senior, and so one of the cadets that I took to the administrative hearing was not a member of the class of 2025.
What impact does this actually have on them? You, as part of your role, have spoken to these cadets, obviously, about this situation. How does this affect them moving forward? Just explain that to us.
So there's a couple of consequences. We can group them broadly under the cadet conduct and discipline consequences, and then the academic consequences. And I was clear in the administrative hearings with the cadets that I was addressing and adjudicating the misconduct portion of this incident rather than the academic consequences. And I would leave it to their instructors to tell them what the particular sanction was for a particular student. For my part, what I was concerned about were the violations of the cadet regulations. And the cadet regulations are a separate disciplinary system that we have access to here in recognition that the Coast Guard Academy is a training environment. And so regular Coast Guard members are governed by the Uniform Code of Military Justice. That's our penal code. There are administrative regulations that apply. But when you are a cadet, for the 200 weeks that you are a cadet in the Coast Guard Academy, the cadet regulations also apply. And the cadet regulations prohibit cheating. And there are different variations of cheating. One of them is the unauthorized receipt of answers. Another one is the unauthorized provision of answers. And those were the two cadet offenses that I was concerned with in the hearings for these 55 individual cadets. Because remember, the conduct at issue was, for the sources, it was the provision of that information, those answers. For people who had received the answers, it was the taking of those answers, the using of them, as well as the sharing of them. And there were some individuals who were identified who simply received the answers but didn't further share.
What explanations about why they did it?
So my assessment as the individual who did the hearings was that there was a combination of reasons for doing this. Failing to abide by the course collaboration policy. The course collaboration policy was clear that you could collaborate on general concepts, but that any graded work that you did was to be your own. So I found that the collaboration policy as communicated by the instructors to the students in the syllabus and verbally was clear. And then what I think we had at issue in this case was carelessness, laziness, sloppiness, and opportunistic sharing of information. In some of the statements that I had access to as the hearing official, some of the articulated reasons were, I ran out of time, and so I used the answers that were provided to me by my friend and classmate. So I would characterize this as, again, opportunistic, lazy, sloppy, careless. What I didn't see was any overarching attempt to cunningly get around the Coast Guard's academic requirements. I saw people that were with their friends and colleagues sharing and giving and receiving answers, and there were multiple sources of those in this investigation.
These are not fresh into the Coast Guard Academy. They're 3 years into a four-year program. 2025, they graduate. They've gone through the process of hopefully understanding what is expected of them as a member of the Coast Guard, honor, truth, and everything else that you believe in. This seems more than just a little bit of a slip-up by them. This isn't what one would expect from people who are about to graduate in a year.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, and that's one of the reasons why I chose to initiate in these 55 cases, not only the investigation, but the ultimate hearings that we did a couple of weeks ago, so that I would have the opportunity to clearly communicate the command's dissatisfaction and displeasure with the choices that these individuals made in this case. And so this was not only an opportunity for me to tell that to them individually, but I was able to say that it is your responsibility to know and understand the collaboration policy. We are training you to be members of the Coast Guard who can be trusted to, in ambiguous situations, either clarify the guidance or otherwise seek instruction and not take the easy, lazy, careless, opportunistic way out. And so I feel like I had the opportunity to communicate that to each of the groupings of cadets that I took to an administrative hearing, especially when I adjudged the sanctions.
Do you feel, after everything that has transpired, your conversations with them, that they get what they've done, not only personally, but the damage potentially that they've caused to the Coast Guard as a whole, at a time when the Coast Guard is already under scrutiny for something else, which is completely separate to this, but the Coast Guard is already under scrutiny. Do they understand what they've done to themselves, but also to the service?
I think they understand that they violated the collaboration policy. I think that they understand, and this was to each one of their credit, during the investigation, when confronted with the evidence that they had shared answers, each one of them admitted to doing so. And I wanted to acknowledge that in the hearings that I did with them, because as I tell the cadets in my role as the Assistant Commandant of Cadets, oftentimes one of the best things to do when confronted with your own wrongdoing is to put the shovel down and stop digging the hole. And I found that in each case that they did that. Then they participated fully in the investigation, and that's not always a foregone conclusion. And then they each admitted to me in the hearing what they had done. So I think there was a recognition on each of the 55's part of their own culpability in this particular incident. Now, as to whether they connected it more broadly to the service's reputation and the recent reporting, I'd like to think that that's the case, but I didn't inquire specifically into that. But certainly it was on my mind as I was adjudicating this case, understanding that we would have to give an accounting of how we chose to resolve this situation. So I guess to answer your question, I'm confident that they understood what they did in this case was wrong. Whether they connected it more broadly to the service's reputation, I'd like to think so, but I'm not sure.
Cadets are also provided the opportunity to appeal the disciplinary actions, which is understandable. I mean, that's what our systems allow for. Is anyone considering appealing the discipline? And then I want to talk about some of the discipline that was meted out.
As I understand it, 22 of the 55 have appealed some portion of the sanctions that I have imposed. And I have encouraged them, as you mentioned, because this is the system we have, to make those appeals to Captain Hernandez and attempt to convince Captain that Commander Cassavant perhaps called the balls and strikes incorrectly in this case.
Turning to sanctions, discipline, however you wish to call them, they look rather lenient based on what's been provided. We're talking about somebody being removed from a summer academic internship, somebody not going to a summer battalion command position. Is that a fair assessment or is that an unfair assessment?
So I thought when I adjudicated that the sanctions that I imposed were commensurate with the offenses that were at issue. And that requires a little bit of explanation. So the cadets involved, they either committed 4, 3, 2, or 1 class 1 offenses. And remember, I said the initial assessment was that they either shared, or received and shared, or simply received. So depending on how many individual decisions you make to distribute answers, to receive and then share those answers, you faced liability for up to 4 class 1 violations. And a class 1 violation simply means the most severe violation that we have under the conduct and discipline system. And so the individuals who admitted to 4 class 1 violations, and those are my individuals who on both homework assignments received answers and shared those answers, they received 200 demerits, 45 marching tours, 45 work hours, and 60 days of administrative restriction. In contrast to the person who admitted to 1 class 1 offense, they received 50 demerits, 25 work hours, 25 marching tours, and 3 weeks of administrative restrictions. So I dialed the sanctions and adjusted the sanctions according to the number of class 1 offenses that were at issue in any particular cadet's case. There were also components of the sanctions that all 55 cadets shared. And some of the ones that you mentioned were in those shared punishments. One of the shared punishments was the loss of your leadership position. By virtue of your actions in this case, you have lost the special trust and confidence that the command has in you. And so cadets lost their class presidency. They lost their assignment to battalion staff, which is our summer leadership for the summer training program. They lost their master at arms positions, which is a second class leadership position in company, as well as their guide on positions. So that was the loss of leadership positions. Another shared sanction was the loss of civilian clothes privileges. privileges for the remainder of the calendar year 2024. Another one was the loss of driving privileges until the remainder of the year, this year up until the summer training cycle. I also required them to do 20 weeks of honor remediation and 6 months of suitability for service probation. Honor remediation requires a little bit of explanation in recognition that this is a training environment and that the cadets may commit core values offenses, which this was, cheating, representing that I was doing the work but did not in fact do the work. We give the cadets the opportunity to go through a remediation program where they work with a mentor to reflect on their experience that led up to the choice to compromise their honor or violate the core value of respect, whatever the case may be, through a series of journal entries and conversations with that mentor. The hope is that they more clearly reflect on the conditions that went into their decision to, in this case, cheat, and what they can do in the future to prevent that from happening again. So each cadet, regardless of the number of Class 1 offenses, I thought needed to remediate the core value of honor. Similarly, the suitability for service probation is an understanding that because of your actions in this case, we are now looking more carefully at you to determine whether you are suitable for continued service as a cadet in the Coast Guard. It's not a recommendation for disenrollment, but any future serious misconduct committed during the period of your suitability for service probation can and more easily result in a recommendation for disenrollment because you are on notice of the requirements and the heightened standards for you in a probationary status. And so to your overarching question of was this too lenient, again, I thought that this was a fair accounting for the conduct at issue, recognizing that this was a training environment and giving these cadets the opportunity to both remediate and demonstrate that they got the message that I was trying to communicate during the administrative hearings.
Potentially, could this affect how they are billeted out? But also, can you explain to us as well, again, based on information that we were provided, we understand that upon graduation, records are then generally sealed and these actions that they've undertaken, they will not necessarily influence their career path going forward.
So a little bit of a proviso with that. Your conduct record at the academy can and does have an impact on your class rank. And so adjudging sanctions under the conduct and discipline system can result in the relative drop in a class rank. And class rank is important because it's the primary factor that drives your assignment after the Coast Guard Academy. Higher ranked individuals in general get their preferred billet choices. Lower ranked individuals do not enjoy that same benefit. Just wanted to make sure that you understood that this can and will have an impact on their class ranks, which will carry forward into their career. But to your point about cadet records being sealed, as you said, it's simply a recognition that your actions in a training environment were just that, choices and actions in a training environment. We're not a zero defect organization. And in this case, I think that every one of those 55 deserve the opportunity to demonstrate to me and my successor in the Coast Guard's Academy's chain of command that they successfully got the message, can rehabilitate and change their behavior, and then move forward into what I think will otherwise be successful careers.
So in that case, the 22 who are appealing this, there's good reason for them to be appealing this in certain cases based on what you've just said, because obviously if they've had positions that they were holding taken away, and you've said that this can go forward as part of the overall, this is how we're looking at you, where we billet you. This is, I'm guessing, why 22 of them have decided this is going to affect what I wanted to achieve.
Yeah, I think that's right. And the appeals, again, I told them, and I typically do this after the administrative hearings, do a Q&A time after that so they can come up and ask questions of me and why I made decisions that I did during the administrative hearing. And I noted that in this instance, the loss of the leadership positions was one of the things that the cadets were very concerned about.
We understand, again, from information provided by the Coast Guard Academy, that there are currently 276 cadets in the class of 2025. If we do a percentage, that's roughly 20% of a class that actually undertook cheating. Is this one of the largest circles of cheating that the Coast Guard Academy has seen?
I am familiar with, and this was several years ago, of a cheating incident that involved 44 cadets. So 55 cadets, 44, perhaps I have the dubious distinction of the most cadets, but this seems to me to be on par with that. So I don't want to make too much of the large number. At the same time, it is roughly 20%. And that's one of the reasons why they share so many features of the sanctions, because a significant portion of the class should share the same sanctions as they work forward through the remediation process.
But to be clear, 55 makes it the largest cheating situation in the Academy's history to date. That's the point I just want to get to.
I would want to, before I say yes to that, want to make sure, but it's certainly the largest one that I'm familiar with.
What has the Coast Guard learned from this? I mean, the cadets have now had to learn what, you know, happens when they cheat. Is there anything different that the Coast Guard has to do to try to eliminate or reduce the possibility of this happening again, either by way of how information is obtained, disseminated, whatever? Can you just give us some insight into that?
My recommendation, and again, I do so advisedly because I'm the individual responsible for the conduct and discipline portion of this, but I would want to make sure that a collaboration policy, which was communicated in advance in the form of the syllabus, that there was a meeting of the minds between the instructors and the cadets so that we're both aligned and we understand what the collaboration policy is. But that doesn't mean that we can't double check and foot stomp that when I say this is the collaboration policy, this is exactly what I mean. And I'm looking for head nods in my class so that we are all on the same page here.
Assistant Commandant of Cadets, Aaron Cassavant of the U.S. Coast Guard Academy. Thank you for the interview.
Welcome.
Since recording that interview, the amount of cadets who are now appealing their discipline over the cheating situation has risen from 22 to 25 cadets. Connecticut East This Week is made possible by Southeastern Connecticut Enterprise Region. We're the region's federally designated economic development organization, providing businesses and municipalities with services and resources to make Southeastern Connecticut stronger and more vibrant. From small business financing to regional economic development strategy to business advising and support to government procurement assistance, we can help you grow. Find out more at sector, that's SECTER.org. And
SCAD, the Southeastern Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence, is looking for licensed clinicians and is offering the top benefits packages in the state. Go to licensedclinicians.org to learn more. That's licensedclinicians.org.
When your home or business is damaged by fire, water, or mold, you just want things to go back to normal fast. That's why Service Master by Mason is available 24/7. Their certified technicians have been restoring homes and businesses from disasters or even helping with specialty cleaning needs for over 30 years. You can rely on Service Master by Mason for everything from fire, smoke, and water damage to mold or a lingering odor. Call today at 860-455-1249 or visit servicemasterbymason.com.
Time now for a look at other stories making the headlines this week. The US and Australia made history recently as three Royal Australian Navy submariners graduated the US Navy's Submarine Officer Basic Course at New London Submarine Base in Grotham. It's the first time sailors from Australia have undertaken the course and is part of the Trilateral Defence Agreement called AUKUS between Australia, the United Kingdom and the USA that was signed in 2021. Lieutenant Commander James Hayden is one of the three Australian submariners and explained what it means to his country and to him.
Being able to take the unblemished nuclear safety record that the US have, the culture, the watchstanding principles, take that home to Australia and set the foundations for our own conventionally armed, sovereign, nuclear-powered submarine capability. Each of us have made a lot of personal and professional sacrifices to come here, so this course culminates in 18 months of schooling, and now we get to cut our teeth and go to sea, which we're all very much looking forward to.
Lieutenant Commander William Hill is another of the three Australian submariners and said they weren't picked but had to apply for the course.
In about mid-2022, the applications came out. We were all able to apply for these positions, went through a few rounds of interviews back home in Australia, and then we flew over here and spoke to NAVCO8, who's in charge of naval reactors, and did that interview process with him like all the American officers do. So it was a long and drawn-out interview process, but it has to be. It needs to be rigorous.
The three Australian sailors graduated with their class of 80 US submariners and will now deploy on US submarines for the next phase of their training. The AUKUS agreement will see the US sell nuclear-powered submarines for the first time in its history to another country and provide training in their use. Aging and leaking natural gas pipes in the city of Norwich, Connecticut, are being replaced thanks to historic funding from the federal government. Norwich Public Utilities, NPU, has been awarded nearly $11 million to begin the process of replacing around 10 miles of old gas pipes, some dating back to the Civil War period. Tristan Brown is the Deputy Administrator of the Department of Transportation's Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration and said there's a lot of work needed in Norwich and across the nation.
This is part of a nationwide tour where we are awarding nearly $400 million, 130 individual projects around the country, and with a goal of replacing or repairing 1,000 miles of high-risk legacy pipe, creating good-paying jobs and modernizing infrastructure for decades.
Christopher LaRose is the general manager of Norwich Public Utilities and said the extra funding really does help them and their customers.
As a result of the two rounds of funding from PHMSA, NPU will now be able to complete more than 25 years of important upgrades to our natural gas system in about 5 years. And this funding represents several million dollars that will not come from our customers to fund these essential upgrades. So our customers, the people we serve, will be greatly helped.
Old pipework will be replaced with modern high-density polyethylene services and will help reduce current gas leaks, improving local air quality and reducing pollutants that contribute to the symptoms and causes of asthma in the community. Small business owners from across the state learned about resources and services available to them at the second annual Connecticut Small Business Summit that was held recently in Mystic. The event was presented by Access Health CT, the state's official health marketplace, and the Chamber of Commerce of Eastern Connecticut. One of the keynote speakers at the event was Sean Scallon, the state comptroller, who told attendees about his mum, who runs a small business, and how in her 70s is still working because she couldn't afford a retirement plan, something that he's helping to change with the state's new MyCT savings.
It's meant to be a way for all of you to offer a retirement plan to your employees at no cost to you. Half of the employers in Connecticut don't offer retirement services to their employees. Most of the time, it's not because they don't want to, it's because they can't afford to, because the fees of those plans are too much for small businesses. They certainly always were for my mom.
Scanlon said they've managed to sign up 6,400 small businesses to MyCT savings, up from just 700 a year ago. Connecticut Congressman Joe Courtney was another keynote speaker at the event and said the location of this year's summit is the fastest growing area in Connecticut for jobs.
At the end of last year, the U.S. Department of Labor Office of Labor Statistics issued their labor market data for 2023, and the fastest growing labor market in the state of Connecticut is the Norwich New London labor market. It hasn't always been that way, but we're very excited that this has really become a growth center for the state of Connecticut. It's the second fastest growing labor market in New England, and it's in the top tier nationally.
Small business owners also learned about health and well-being offerings for their staff, as well as marketing their companies on social media and having more impact in their local communities. And it's been 3 months since the former First Congregational Church in the city of New London, Connecticut, collapsed unexpectedly on January 25th. Since then, the building has been demolished by the city, and the owners, Engaging Heaven Ministries, have made no official comment on how or when they intend to pay back the city or the mortgage owners. Mike Passero is the mayor of the city of New London and said they have heard that developers may be in talks with church officials.
There are two liens on the property. There's the mortgage from the First Congregational Church, and there's also the city's lien for the demolition. So, you know, we're keenly interested in what happens, but we're confident that nothing can happen without the taxpayers being reimbursed. But we're also really interested in having the property cleaned up sooner rather than later, and we'd love to see what's going to be the next use for that very important parcel in the middle of our downtown.
High Tide Capital, the owners of a building next door to the former church that is home to Connecticut College students, have filed a court notice against Engaging Heaven over a potential lawsuit related to a retaining wall on their property they say was damaged during the collapse and needs repairing. Kathy Zoll is a member of the First Congregational Church. They sold the property to Engaging Heaven several years ago, but remain the mortgage owners, and said things have changed since the incident.
I think it's sort of all been put on hold, and I understand that. So I'm not sure. I wouldn't be surprised if we haven't been paid, let's say, for February, March. That's sort of the least of the issues right now. It's sort of the longer term.
Zoll said they have placed a lien on the property to protect their interests in the sum of $250,000, the same figure the City of New London's lien is for unpaid demolition costs. Under recently expanded receivership statutes in the state, New London could ask the courts to give it control and management of the blighted building site if a development deal isn't struck soon to help recover its costs. Connecticut East this week reached out to Engaging Heaven and its lawyers, who said they have no comment at this time on the ongoing situation. That's all from us for this edition. Do send us your questions and story ideas to the show via our website at connecticut-east.com or Facebook or Twitter at Connecticut East and on Instagram at Connecticut East This Week. And you can listen to the show again on our social platforms, on demand, and by asking your smart speaker to play Connecticut East This Week podcast. And please like, follow, and share on your social media too. I'm Brian Scott-Smith. Thank you for listening.